you are posting, you know, I've got a dog, or I'm going to the store to get some dog food, and Facebook is giving you a dog food ad 10 seconds later. This is already super creepy. And Mark Zuckerberg had previously made a statement essentially saying that privacy is a social norm of the past. And he said that in 2010.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast, and I'm very excited about the type of conversation that we need to have today more than ever. If we've been on social media, which we all have, if not, you've been impacted by it since everyone else around you is definitely on it, and our privacy has become something that is no longer within our control. We've seen people going absolutely crazy with echo chambers and ways that we're trying to have these conversations online where it always turns to some of the extreme. We feel like our children are going to be exposed to this types of information. We can't even see if it's true. We're hearing things like fake news. We have election cycles that we don't even know what to trust anymore. And it seems like politicizing of everything everywhere is just going to the more extreme. How do we restore our sanity online is the title of the upcoming book by Mark Weinstein, who's with me today. The man has been the creator of social media as a platform, has been the one around so many organizations when it comes to bringing Web 1.0 in the 90s, Web 2.0 in the 2020s, has been the founder of MeWe, a social platform that is decentralizing social access with over 20 million users, and a very big advocate around understanding what is surveillance capitalism, why is it rising, accelerating, and his new book is really teaching us a new framework for social media and how to consume online so we can keep our minds and do things the right way. He's been featured on Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Newsweek, LA Times, Fox, CNN, BBC, NPR, and so much more. It's a great honor to have Mark Weinstein on the show with me. Mark, welcome to the platform.
Thank you, Jason. And, you know, it's really great to be with you because we're talking to everyday folks today, you know, who are very smart, who are entrepreneurial, who have families or, you know, are online themselves. And we've really got to get this whole mess straightened out because our democracy is eroding, our kids, their mental health is, you know, forgive me, but it's in the toilet. You know, we're being manipulated, targeted, abused, our data is being stolen. You know, it's a mess online in social media.
And it's so fascinating because I watched your landmark TED Talk, which was 4 years ago around the rise of surveillance capitalism. And I have my own assumptions that it seems like things have not gotten better. They've gotten worse since you've actually warned us about how our privacy and our data is being sold. We're already freaking out back then about how Alexa seems to be listening to our conversation and recommending us products. I'd be curious to see what are the changes that you've noticed from back when you did that talk and what we're seeing today.
Listen, data surveillance is massive. And with the advent of AI, now AI is really not new for our listeners because AI has been around. An algorithm is a form of AI. It's just not a learning mechanism. It's programmed to do exactly what it does. The shift is now those algorithms can learn. So in the past, you know, let's say Facebook had thousands, which is true, and I talked about this in my TED Talk, thousands of psychologists working for them, doing psychoanalytics on how to best target Facebook members. Well, today, AI can do that for them because it's learning, it's studying you, it's learning everything about you and then feeding that into its own system of how in the world to get you to do something, take an action, to freak you out, to keep you glued to the screen, all those things. So what we've seen is the acceleration of surveillance capitalism with this new tool called AI. And so we go back, just a step back, because surveillance capitalism really had its rise in the advent of Web 2 and really, you know, got its mojo through Google, Facebook, and like-minded sites. And in 2012, one of my first interviews around Facebook was the day before they went public on Fox Business News. And they had me on to tell everybody, look, you are posting, you know, I've got a dog, or I'm going to the store to get some dog food, and Facebook is giving you a dog food ad 10 seconds later. This is already super creepy. And Mark Zuckerberg had previously made a statement essentially saying that privacy is a social norm of the past. And he said that in 2010. He's been transparent. And when he said that, my jaw dropped because, you know, for all of us, it's like, okay, for your pocketbook, you've decided that privacy is over for the world. There's something fundamentally wrong here. This is screwed up.
Yeah. And, you know, it's crazy because we're all kind of playing our part in being complicit about it for the sake of convenience, right? Like terms and conditions come up. We click accept. We use these platforms. We know we're the product. We're not paying for free platforms. We're the product, and they're selling that to advertisers. And we choose to play along. And I feel like there's a long-term consequence of that that maybe not as apparent and that we're not maybe sensitized to. So I'd be curious to see where does the end game go as we continue to be not aware or not even reacting to the fact that this is happening all the time everywhere.
This is the long tail of this because in 2013, Colin Hoback, a great documentary filmmaker, produced and filmed Terms and Conditions May Apply. And he followed Mark Zuckerberg around with a camera. And he, you know, interviewed incredible people. And this is way before The Social Dilemma came out, 8 or 9 years later. And we have become complicit, but there's a reason why. It's called the network effect. Facebook has been so massively funded and has generated so much revenue from their ability to, you know, target you so pinpointedly with products and services and other things that make you feel like you need them and really understand your psychology and your purchasing power and all the things. They bundle that all together as they, you know, pop things in front of you for you to acquire, you know, et cetera. But the network effect. Now, what the network effect means, everybody, is that, you know, for Facebook or if you're younger and you're on Snap or wherever you are, you're on X, that everybody you know or everybody you want to know or everybody you want to be connected with is on that same platform. And this is what's happened and why the dominance of these, you know, huge big tech players, you know, has really come about and why startups can't really, you know, make an inroad anymore. When's the last time you heard, besides of a company like MeWe, which I founded and I left 2 years ago to write how we're going to fix all this, when's the last time you heard of somebody launching a Facebook competitor? It's been years. Facebook is a complex product because there's many services on it, and they have the network effect. Your family, your friends, you know, everybody you know in the world is somehow there, even if, you know, a lot of people don't use it the way they used to. It's still there for that purpose, personal, social networking. That's, you know, really interacting with people you know, getting your news there, you know, connecting with your family and friends, finding like-minded people, you know, all their pages, their groups. And of course, they have Instagram as a complement feature. So this network effect, and of course, then they bought WhatsApp. So now, you know, supposedly you have this encrypted, you know, service, which is actually, you know, barely encrypted. It's encrypted all right, but Facebook changed the privacy policy on WhatsApp. I think it was in 2016, and then they kind of went public with it. I wrote about that in 2016 when they did it. They did it on Super Bowl weekend when nobody was paying attention. But then fast forward to, it was about 2 or 3 years ago, then they really made it public that they, you know, were taking permission to spy on everything you're doing on WhatsApp except the conversation that they couldn't access. But they know where you were, who you were talking to, for how long you were talking to them, you know, who else is in the group or the conversation. I mean, they could piece it all together. So, and they still do, by the way. So if you're using WhatsApp and thinking your privacy is protected, think again, which is why the founders of WhatsApp, you know, abandoned Facebook. The founders of Instagram, too, abandoned Facebook. So, you know, we want to be savvy, but the network effect, and this leads us to what does the government do about it? And Jason, I want to step into this for a second because this is one of those examples where we can't fix this on our own. Now, if you're paying attention, even if you're not, don't worry because I'm going to tell you what happened. Recently, you know, 2 weeks ago, Google was found guilty of antitrust. And this is a huge big deal that we have laws in our country to support capitalism, to support the free market. And then what happens is companies without ethics get bigger and bigger and bigger. This happened in big ag, in big energy, and now in big tech. They take over. So Google took over. Facebook took over. Amazon took over. And what this does is squeezes out all of the entrepreneurs. You know, we've got a room full of entrepreneurs that are listening to this today and, you know, just great regular folks that are working on their careers and their lives. So if you get squeezed out because there's a big player that's too big, that's actually purposefully interfering. Google, for example, was paying big companies like Apple and many others to use their search engine. Google locked down 50% of the search engine, the ad market associated with search engines. And so Google's search engine was everywhere. And therefore, Google could manipulate the results of the search engine, whatever their best, you know, revenue deals are for what the, your search results at the top, instead of actually giving you a really pure, you know, clear, straightforward search result. So there's a case, the Federal Trade Commission, which you know, prosecutes these cases, is now doing it with Facebook and with Amazon, because we've got to restore our sanity with also with help in certain ways from the government. And also then you've got the inventor of the web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee. So now Tim has called, you know, my new book, Restoring Our Sanity Online, Tim calls it a vital read. He says, this is a vital read. Tim is also very involved and very disturbed about the complete erosion of privacy. So he and his team at Solid have created something called pods. Now, pods are a really cool phenomenon. And as they gain some traction momentum, this is very important. So in other words, a pod, your data will be stored on a pod. You'll decide what you upload to Facebook or Snap or MeWe or, you know, anywhere. And then you can pull it back and you're going to control your data and they won't be able to target or manipulate you without your permission. And this is going to change the game. It's called data portability or data interoperability. You may have heard a little bit about this before, but we're going to need some government help in regulating structures so that, you know, for example, when you download your Facebook account right now and you get all your posts and your pictures, it comes down in really, you know, a tornado or mess, and you can't upload it anywhere. Nobody can build an uploader to, you know, upload it in a functioning manner on somebody else's website. So, you know, these are things, something like that. So the point is, Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the web, also has his eye on this. And there's a lot to do. And we've gotten stuck with the network effect, and we've got to break the back of the network effect.
Mark, I love that you're bringing all these things that I've had a curiosity for. I've heard of the pod and of Solid, and I think I've never understood how relevant and how emergency that we really need to push this forward. And it sounds like there are some actions from the government, at least from the American government, to bring in these antitrust laws to see how we can actually get our power back as individuals. But I've also seen the dark side, and I think this is just as recent. We've seen in England, they're passing laws that things that you would have said online can be used against you for criminal charges. Is that even like, that's the Black Mirror type of scenario that seems to be coming out from us just slowly letting our privacy erode?
You know, I've got to sort of nod and bump this one. The English, you know, that's up to a site to moderate. And, you know, the good sites are doing the, you know, well, hopefully sites are doing a better job today so that we don't get these terrible, you know, murders and, you know, crazy things that happen because of lies that are perpetrated online. So this is concerning for sure. The flip side of it is the English, and I wish they just stuck with this group of laws because they have new laws where they can put social media executives in jail if the social media executives purposefully violate the laws around children's privacy and things like that, you know, for the sake of the pound or the dollar. And that's a really good one. I've written, you know, about this several times in the U.S. press, that we ought to take a look at those laws, because instead of slapping a company on the wrist, like when Facebook released the privacy, you know, all the data on 220 million American adults in the Cambridge Analytica scandal, their fine was $5 billion. Now, Don't think that's a lot. You want to think, oh my God, that's tiny. The value of the company went up more than $5 billion the same day that fine was levied. The maximum fine that could have been levied was somewhere in the neighborhood of several trillion dollars, according to what they had violated and the fines that they could have been levied against them. So imagine if there was also the threat of the executive going to jail for violating privacy laws, for, you know, doing the wrong thing for the sake of a dollar. Now, that is where England has it right. Very concerned about, you know, the laws that allow them to put people in jail for posting hate. And I am very much for trust and safety, moderation. You know, I said as much on Fox, you know, during the January 6th, you know, a week after that, you know, they were asking me, what happened to Parler? How come they're not in the stores? And I said, you've got to have some moderation. You can't just have a site that spews hate and incites violence. You know, good people can't be there. Civil discourse, disagreement, that's the backbone of functioning democracies. But hate and inciting violence, you know, we've got to watch that carefully. And in Restoring Our Sanity Online, I talk about a new model for moderation where users, juries of your peers, will also be involved, so that if you don't like how you're being moderated by the company's trust and safety team, you could appeal it. And by the way, this is really borrowed. You know, Twitter has something very similar, and I think it's one of their better features, not widely used, not widely talked about, and, you know, not perfectly implemented. But there are ways to reinvent social media so that we have civil discourse, so that nothing is boosted, so that kids are protected. You know, there's a lot we can do in a, what I call restoration networking, which I believe is really Web 4's mission and not Web 3. Web 3 won't get us there.
I can see how when you compare, you know, social media in the early days and how now it's just so much everywhere, this whole idea of moderation is seeming like the impossible task of where do you exactly put that line. But you're speaking about this new concept, this restorative networking, and I'd love for you to unpack on how does that apply and why is it important for us to pay attention to that?
So, you know, in the early days, and I was there in Web 1, I'm one of the, there's a whole group of us who invented social networking in the 90s, and we called them community portals. We didn't call it social networking then. We called them community portals. And it was really, you know, this is idealism. This is the same way that Big Ag started and Big Energy started. It wasn't started with these big monolithic companies. It was started in sort of an idealistic, well, we can produce more food to serve the village. And, you know, it was all organic then anyhow. Well, we can, you know, figure out a way to generate more energy, to generate electricity to serve the village. You know, this is how it starts. It's, these are good ideas. These are wholesome ideas. These are visionary ideas. And then the slippery slope of, you know, some companies get bigger traction and bigger traction, and then they sort of block out, they muscle out the smaller companies, they buy them or they crush them. And all of a sudden you end up with this world of, you know, huge monopolies. And so what happens now is, how do we get back to, and this is what I call restoration networking. We're following the model because Big Ag and Big Energy, if you look at them, they both have movements. Movements are started not by, you know, the Exxons of the world, the Exxon Mobils or the large, you know, corporations. They're started by entrepreneurs. This is why the free market is so important. You know, and all of a sudden, organic farming starts to become a movement and solar energy becomes a movement. And, you know, we have to watch these carefully because they're best served with the outsiders, you know, spreading the wealth and spreading the good deeds and having a very altruistic and purposeful capitalist focus on it. This is ethical capitalism, what I call conscious capitalism. A friend of mine invented, co-founder, Raj Sisodia, conscious capitalism. And there are many great companies that practice conscious capitalism. Southwest Airlines, The Container Store, Whole Foods, so many. So what we've got to do is, you know, bring it back. Bring it back where the users participate. The users are involved in profit sharing. After all, the users make all the money for the corporations, where, you know, it's more altruistic in a certain context because we're really supporting. And where there's no boosted content, where a news agency doesn't have to worry about the articles their reporters write because they're going to get censored. There's no quid pro quo. You know, Facebook delivers news to almost 40% of their users. And if they have a few billion users, that's a huge piece of the world getting their news on Facebook. And if Facebook doesn't like your news outlet, then you're screwed because you make money based on circulation. And if Facebook is clamping down, even when their members are posting a link from your news site, but Facebook isn't letting that post go anywhere, you're in trouble. So there's a lot that we can do to restore. And, you know, by getting rid of posting, by making stricter rules. Now, listen, I am supporting something that some people will find controversial, but it's really not. Hear me out. This is user ID verification. Now, talk about privacy. I've been opposed to user ID verification my entire career. I've been on government committees where I'm the guy in the room saying, you guys are nuts. We can never do this. Now, in 2024, here's what I see. All the companies in the government know who we are anyhow. So we ought to stop pretending that we're online. They don't know who we are. They know who we are. They've got all our data. There was a reporter from The Guardian who asked Facebook for his data. Just a regular guy. 60,000 pages of data. You can look this up. It's all factual. Unbelievable. So let's protect our kids. User ID verification so that a 30-year-old, a 50-year-old, a creep is not targeting our kids. So their kids can't be targeted at all. So the bots and trolls are going to have to go away because they're all going to have to be verified. And if they can't boost and they can't post outrageous content that gets boosted, because right now X has this system where, you know, you can become one of their, you know, premium members, and then, you know, you can, all your posts get boosted. Now look, bots and trolls come from bots and troll farms. Yes, there are algorithms and AI involved, but there are thousands of people paid, you know, very small amounts of money to do this, and they all have access to the credit cards from their benefactors. You know, often these are in adversarial countries. They could be in Russia, China, elsewhere. And of course, they can get hold of a credit card and use their algorithm to quickly create many, you know, checkbox X users. And now they're all their posts get boost, posting, you know, lies and vitriol all over, you know, the web. This is something it's time for, guys. We have to sacrifice anonymity to protect privacy. It's a very interesting phenomenon. I talk about this in my book. We've got to do it. You know, our kids are, you know, being sold down the river. If you're under the age of 30, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's not just getting hooked on social media. It's getting manipulated on social media. It's getting to a point where you can't use good critical thinking to figure out what's true and what's not. If you're a teenager, it's about body shaming. It's about bullying. It's about self-imaging. It's about, you know, if you get on TikTok or Instagram and you're a brand new user or even an existing user, and you're young, all of a sudden your newsfeed is full of disgusting stuff because they're trying to poison your mind and give you outrageous content to keep you stuck there. And I have friends who run this experiment with their kids, their 13-year-olds, and they're appalled. This really happens, everybody. We've got to stop it.
It sounds like there is an alliance of, call it the old guards, the founders of the internet, yourself, social media, and there seems to be a group of people, including Steve Wozniak or Tim Berners-Lee, all getting together and sounding the alarm really, really strong. And then there seems to be another generation like after that seems to be perpetuating the problem. Is that a real thing that's going on or just a perceived image that I'm seeing in this ecosystem?
This comes back to, you know, our earlier conversation about the network effect. So we've got a lot of young people and a lot of people who make their living on sites like Instagram and TikTok. And, you know, TikTok in particular, which is not owned by an American company and feeds all of our data right into the Chinese data system, the Chinese government, including, you know, our login IDs, you know, all of our fingerprints, you know, everything. So, but people are hooked. And so when you talk about banning TikTok or forcing a TikTok sale, and I've written about this in Newsweek in 2022 on The Hill 2 months ago, also another piece, and the government now is starting to move in that direction, at least authorizing that TikTok has to sell to an American owner and keep their servers in the United States and not port any data outside from its American user base. Now, that's really important because, yes, the surveillance capitalism business model is sound and furious, you know, in its continuous slurping and aggregation. This is massive. And yes, people are hooked. People are hooked. We all know people who are like on TikTok all day, talking to their friends about what they're seeing on TikTok. Remember, the screen is highly addictive. So if you've got kids, if you've got babies, I beg you, every pediatrician in the world knows this. There's so much scientific data about this. Don't give your babies the phone. Try to minimize how much they see you on the phone. Stick a book in front of them, even if they start chewing on it. You got to have a rule. There's no such thing as too many books. And when you go to a restaurant, don't think it's convenient to give a phone to your kid so that you can enjoy your time. That's not convenient. You're going to create an addict, and you're going to have a lot of problems and attention disorders and all kinds of things. Don't do that. You know, bring yourself back to sanity. So, you know, it's only hard for a little while. Once you give them a crayon and paper, or you bring toys with you and just distraction. And then as they get older, it's the same thing. You know, there's a big movement in the United States now, finally, to ban kids from bringing their phones to schools. LAUSD, the second biggest school system in the country, just did this. This is what's important. We don't need our kids to have a phone in case there's some kind of crisis at schools. The odds of that are nominal. In a crisis, you'll be getting plenty of information anyhow. Don't need to know if your kid's okay. The schools, everything, emergency, everybody will tell you. Your kid needs not to have a phone at school. Your kid needs to focus on school, not on TikTok, not on calling all their other friends in the other classes, not on texting, none of that. So we've really got to restore our sanity, you know, with all our electronic devices. And here's the thing, though. Jason, I love social media. I'm one of the inventors of social media. It's a great phenomenon. It is amazing to use this technology to connect with our family, our friends, like-minded people, find new interests, learn about new things, get a recipe, you know, whatever, everything. This is unbelievable. We've just got to get the problems straightened out so that democracy is preserved, so that our kids are taught to critically think and are not targeted and manipulated and harmed. We've just got to bring it back to sanity.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is exactly where I want to make a mention for everybody paying attention to this. You have to understand how important this is. And Restoring Our Sanity Online, a revolutionary social framework, has just been released. And I urge everyone, in the show notes, you'll see a link to the book. You can see it pop up on the screen if you're watching this on YouTube. You want to be able to have at least some tools, because I'll be honest, Mark, before this conversation, the biggest thought that I had is there's nothing I can do. It's hopeless. And I feel like what you're trying to create is an awareness that that is not the case.
Jason, that's exactly the point, because the hopelessness and the mystification of, you know, oh, there's nothing I can do. It's, you know, I'm just a small nothing in this. That's not true, everybody. And, you know, this is what the inventor of the web is working on. This is what I'm working on. I mean, we all have power and we can change this. We are. Restoring Our Sanity Online is about how do we do this? And also, it's full of, this is an entertaining read. This is not a how-to book, although there's plenty for parents, you know, how to take care of yourself and your kids right now. There's plenty of good stuff in there about what you can do right now. Empowerment, you know, taking your power back. But this is also a fascinating, you know, purposely written. Listen, when you look at the parallels of big ag, big energy, and big tech, and you go back and then you go forward and you do it, you know, just in a few pages, this is fascinating. When you read about, you know, Facebook asking everybody in Australia to send a naked picture of themselves to Facebook so they could take care of revenge porn in Australia. I mean, you know, this book is full of jaw-dropping anecdotes that will just keep you going to the promised land, to the solutions. But that's the whole point. It's a great read. And that's why Tim says it's a vital read. That's why Waz says everybody has to read this book. That's why Raj Sisodia, founder of Conscious Capitalism, says every business executive and every person needs to read this book. That's why Marshall Goldsmith, the greatest executive coach in the world, who wrote this great book, I love his title, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And that's the whole point of this book, says again, everybody needs to read, you know, Restoring Our Sanity Online. Now, this is not me touting myself, guys. This is a book that was written with collaboration. I have these great advisors in my life for, you know, Raj and Tim and Waz. This is a book that is purposefully written. This is a mission. You know, we've got to take it on ourselves. We've got to get this movement going. We've got to start the dialogue and get back to, oh, I can do this? Why, that's easy. Oh, I can protect my kids this way? That's easy. Oh, this is how I can critical think? That news story? Oh, great. You know, this is how I can make money if I want to. This is how I can be empowered as a creator instead of screwed as a creator. Wait, I'm making all that money for that website? No. Let's share. Let's empower. There's lots of ways, lots of things in the book, and we map the whole thing out. But the point is, it's a fun read. It's an exciting read. It brings all of us together. We can do this.
Mark, I'm really grateful that you came on. And although my typical conversations are around sales, I think having this conversation is just as important, if not more important, so that we can actually move forward as entrepreneurs and know what tools are available to us and the risk that exists with the platforms that we use, the way that we navigate online, which is where a big portion of our lives is being spent. And I think for everyone here that might have had that sense of hopelessness, which is a bit of what's making us go a little crazy right now, knowing that there are elements of hope that exist, there are solutions we can take and ways that we can explore. And it sounds like there's a lot of powerful, influential people such as yourself and the allies that support your literature as well, that are actually going to be there as gatekeepers that are pushing forward the right things so that we can move towards something that's much better than the direction that seems to be going down. So for everybody listening, big things that I've taken away from here is reevaluating my relationship with all these platforms, being curious about these innovations that are happening from people that have been sounding the alarm, such as Solid is something I remember being a little aware of, and now I'm going to go back and be curious about it, and really thinking about where I spend my money. I'm someone that's using advertising on these platforms. Are there better places that I might be able to get better results and not necessarily support a type of world that we don't want to go in the direction of? So Mark, it's been a pleasure. It's awesome that you've came on the show, but I do have to ask you the one question I ask every guest, which is you are on the Selling with Love podcast. So I'd like to ask you, what does selling with love mean to you?
You know, I'm so glad you asked me that question. Listen, everybody, if you haven't gotten it, I use the word love today about social media. I love social media. I love healthy, powerful, empowering, nurturing connectivity and technology. Selling with love, I'll tell you this, because I'm really a student of love in that I used to compete in tennis. I used to play tournaments in New Mexico. I became the number one in my, you know, ranking level in New Mexico in the Southwest. I won a silver medal at the State Games of America, which is an Olympic Committee sponsored. It's just internally United States in my ranking level. And here's how I did it. I did it by using love. Love is the most powerful energy. It's the most powerful ambiance in the world. And just so you know, like when you can anchor yourself in a loving feeling, and that's what I did before every point. This is what I experimented with. This is what I mastered on the tennis court. If you can anchor yourself in unconditional love about anything, whatever it is that you can anchor yourself in the feeling of unconditional love, it doesn't have to be related to anything you're doing in the moment. Just get yourself there and make sure there's nothing conditional about that feeling and then play your game. You're going to win. Love is the most powerful ambiance in the world.
Amen to that. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure for having you on the show. thank you for the fight that you are fighting, the advocacy that you are bringing, and the solutions that you are putting in our hands. For everybody tuning in, I highly encourage Restoring Our Sanity Online. The book just came out. You can grab a copy, especially when you buy it just the moment at launch. It really gets more people to be aware of this, get this book into their hands. And with that, we'll be able to chip away at what has been taken away from us, which is taking our privacy back, taking our freedom back, and making sure that the world doesn't get into what would be considered a dystopian future, but rather a utopian of the potential and good intention that brought all these tools in our fingertips. Let's make sure that it goes in the direction that we want it to be. We have that power. We do have hope, and we have solutions. Mark, thank you for bringing that to us.
Thank you, Jason. It's a pleasure and honor to be on your program. Thank you.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.